Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
I'm Ruth Jackson, part of the Unbelievable team, and you are listening to a classic replay programme from the archives. The episode you are about to hear was first broadcast on Premier Christian Radio on the 12th of December 2009. Justin reviews a debate on the motion Atheism is the New Fundamentalism. It features atheists Richard Dawkins and A.C. Grayling and Christians Richard Harries and Charles Moore. You can get in touch with the show and listen to more episodes at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable.
Good afternoon and welcome along to the programme. I'm Justin Brierley with you this Saturday afternoon for Unbelievable, the show that gets Christians and non-Christians talking, and a really interesting edition of the show coming up for you today. Let me tell you, it's a little bit different today.
You're unbelievable.
That's because rather than having a studio conversation this afternoon, we're going to be hearing my reflections on a recent debate that took place between Richard Dawkins, A.C. Grayling, Lord Richard Harries and Charles Moore. This is a debate that took place at Wellington College under the auspices of the Intelligent Squared Debate Organisation, and they were debating the proposition that atheism is the new fundamentalism. Richard Dawkins and A.C. Grayling on the atheist side, Lord Richard Harries and Charles Moore, former editor of the Daily Telegraph, on the other. You'll be hearing sections of that debate and my interviews with people after the debate and some of my comments along the way. Do hope you enjoy the programme here today on Unbelievable. Yes, so things a little bit different today, and we're going to have our introductions in just a moment from the people who were involved in that debate. The person chairing the debate, by the way, was Anthony Seldon. He is the master of Wellington College, and you'll be hearing a short interview I took with him after the debate a little later on in the programme as well. As I say, the motion for this debate was atheism is the new fundamentalism, and I'll give you what the votes were for and against that motion before the debate began. For that motion, 333. Against it, 675, and undecided, 389, which gives you a picture of how many people were at the debate, about 1,500. It was very well attended. So we had, first of all, in this debate, introductory arguments, and I'm just going to play some segments of those, edited segments. This is not the full audio. If you want to hear that or see that, you can go to the Intelligence Squared website. What you'll hear is just some edited extracts of the discussions and the points of view that were put forward and some of the questions and answers during the evening. So here, starting out with his particular view on whether atheism is the new fundamentalism, is Lord Richard Harries, the former Bishop of Oxford, and he was keen to show that there are several ways in which he believes the new atheism adheres to the characteristics of fundamentalism.
Let me begin by emphasising that I understand all too well and have the deepest respect for certain forms of atheism. But what we're dealing with this evening is what has been termed the new atheism, associated particularly with its attack dogs, Daniel Dennett, Christopher Hitchens, and very sadly from my point of view, my friend Richard Dawkins, who writes such wonderfully inspiring books on science. Now, I would suggest that fundamentalism has four main characteristics. First of all, it's impervious to the facts. Nothing is allowed to count against it. Now, it seems to me that the new atheism has this feature of fundamentalism, is that it simply does not allow the case, the strong case, to count in any way at all. It ignores the fact that the greatest philosophers in Western society down the ages for 2,000 years or more have either been religious believers or have had a philosophy which points to religious belief. They simply do not take that into account. Second feature of fundamentalism, it always picks on the weakest points in another person's arguments. But is it not true that if you're really confident of your case, you face the opponent's strongest argument? You don't simply always focus on their weakest arguments. And then thirdly, the kind of God which is so often criticized. Many of you will have read Philip Pullman's wonderful, wonderful book, The Dark Materials. But can you remember the kind of God that is pictured in that? A kind of wizened old human being, nothing better. And as a young child said once when they read that book, I never believed in that kind of God, and nor do Christian believers. And this points to the fourth and final reason why the new atheism can be described as the new fundamentalism. And that is, it focuses only on the kind of God in whom creationists believe. It looks as though religious fundamentalism and atheistic fundamentalism need each other and feed on each other. The kind of God I believe in is very, very different from the kind of God which they are attacking. It's the kind of God which is revealed for me at the end of Rabbi Hugo Grin's great autobiography, where he says he was in Auschwitz as a child. He hoped God would rescue him. That God never came. And he cried and cried for hours. And then he realized that, as he says, people sometimes ask me, where was God in Auschwitz? I believe that God was there himself, he said, violated and blasphemed. The real question is, where was man in Auschwitz?
Thank you very much indeed.
Well, next up to the podium to speak was atheist philosopher A.C. Grayling, and he was keen to say that up till recently, atheists haven't been all that vocal, but that things have changed since the 9/11 terrorist attacks.
Since 2001, however, things have changed. And they've changed in that people who don't have a religious commitment have very often spoken out robustly and uncompromisingly and have been very frank about their point of view. And it is this, I think, the tone of the discussion which has alarmed people who are defenders and apologists for religion. I don't think that there are supernatural agencies in the world on very, very good and considered grounds. Remember that what we take to be the case in the universe has to be proportional to the evidence that we have for it. And in this metaphysical question of what kind of place the universe is, there are very few grounds indeed for thinking that there is anything other than what natural laws reveal to us in all the beauty and excellence of the universe. The second thing, and this really is where the debate takes off, is secularism. Secularism is about the place of religious faith in the public square. And what a reasonable secularist thinks and should think is this, that religion and religious organizations has every right to exist and every right to have its say. But it has no greater right than any other self-constituted, self-elected interest group in society. And that I think, is where a good deal of the acerbity enters the debate. I'll give you an example. As you know, President Obama is trying to get some legislation through Congress in Washington at the moment to have a national health care insurance scheme. Just very recently, in the last few days, the Roman Catholic Church, which is a very powerful lobby in the United States, has succeeded in getting a clause accepted by the House of Representatives, which provides that nobody will benefit from this national health insurance scheme in order to get a termination of pregnancy, to get an abortion. It's just one very small example. One can cite many, many examples across many societies. So I would argue that given the fact that to be a non-believer is to stand in a relation to religion in the same way as the non-stamp collector stands to the stamp collector, that is, you just simply don't share that view, it's extremely hard indeed to be a fundamentalist non-stamp collector You just don't take that particular view, and the fact that you don't says nothing else about what you believe and how you behave. Thank you very much.
The third person, and he really for me was the revelation of the evening, was Charles Moore, speaking in favour of the motion, a former editor of the Daily Telegraph and, as became evident during the things he said, a very committed Christian. He took the view that the new atheism is too simplistic and naive in its attacks. Here's some of what he had to say.
One of the strange things about our opponents, I think, is that they don't see the difficulty of this subject. To them, the truth is evident, and God and religion are evidently untrue. I think that what they think they're doing is they're shining a clear light of reason on the subject. But I would say that the light that they're casting is rather like the light, the searchlight, that the guards use in one of those war films. It sweeps wildly across the sky, and sometimes pointing vainly upwards, sometimes rushing past its intended target, and sometimes almost by chance, fixing upon the poor prisoners trying to escape to freedom. And standing behind its pitiless beam, Commandant Dawkins orders the victims to be gunned down. Our opponents tonight claim to speak for atheism. They speak with anger and with certainty. All those of us who are against fundamentalism should unite against their cause. Surely what we find so unattractive about fundamentalism is the attitude that it discloses to the truth and to other people. First, to the truth. Instead of the truth being something which expands the mind, fundamentalists turn it into a harsh and narrow test to which humanity is forced to submit. Natural selection explains the whole of life, proclaims Richard Dawkins, and whatever else is said is wrong. It seems to me that the fundamentalist atheist assumes his superiority in advance. In an extraordinary passage in his book, Professor Dawkins points out that members of Mensa, the society of people with a high IQ, tend to be atheists. He also says that there are few atheists in prison. Therefore, he thinks, atheists are better, brighter people than believers. Like a clever schoolboy, he thinks that only brain power matters. The prisoner, whose faith Professor Dawkins looks down on with such disdain, understands something about the human predicament which is denied to those who worship only success. It's a unique feature of serious religion that it appeals both to some of the best minds who have ever lived and to the most unfortunate people in the world. It is also often very clearly grasped, and this is something which Professor Dawkins really hates, by children. When Professor Dawkins sees two pieces of wood traversing one another at right angles, perhaps he sees only a plus sign, or perhaps only the wood. But a Christian cannot see the plain wood, this plain wood, without thinking of the cross on which Jesus suffered and died. And as he surveys that cross or holds it, he will remember his belief that from death on that cross came the conquest of death. So for us, the whole world in its most daily occurrences, in bread or wine or a piece of wood, is charged with the deepest meaning. So what we are saying to Professor Dawkins and Professor Grayling and all the rest of these fundamentalists tonight is what Hamlet says to Horatio: there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And finally, of course, Richard Dawkins was the, if you like, the key draw of the evening. He needs no introduction. And judging by the level of applause he received, both before he came on to speak and whenever he did make a point, many had obviously turned up to see him.
There is no holy book of atheism, and never could be. Atheism is not a belief system. There's no catechism of atheism, no 39 articles, no Torah, no Quran. There is no book, only publicly verifiable evidence. And that's anything but fundamentalist, because it contains a commitment to change as new evidence comes in. One of the many lies told about us is that we are dogmatically certain that we know the truth, know everything that is to be known. It's not really that we're bored by what we already know, but we're so excited by what it leads on to, which is what we don't know. We want to roll up our sleeves and get down to knowing more. We, however, admit with some excitement that there are gaps in our knowledge, gaps waiting to be filled. Gaps do not provide a license to fill them with any old stuff that we happen to make up. And most certainly they don't provide a license for any old stuff that happened to be made up by a tribe of ignorant desert nomads and just happened to get into some holy book or other. Science may not know what happened before the Big Bang. Science may not know yet how life began. But if science doesn't know the answer to those questions, then there's absolutely no reason to suppose that the answer is to be found in an ancient book or any religious text. To believe that would be true fundamentalism. We are accused of giving offence. Well, I think a great deal of this stems simply from the fact that religion has for so long been feather-bedded. Our whole society, the non-religious as well as religious portions of it, has bought into the fiction that it's somehow bad manners to criticise religion. Douglas Adams put it beautifully in an impromptu speech in Cambridge in 1998. Religion has certain ideas at the heart of it which we call sacred or holy or whatever. What it means is, here is an idea or a notion that you're not allowed to say anything bad about. You're just not. Why not? Because you're not. So when somebody like me says something even mildly critical of religion, it is heard as strident and aggressive, even if it's actually less so than would be perfectly acceptable if it were anything other than religion that was being criticised. There's nothing really new about the so-called new atheists. The only thing new about us is that we speak up and we call a spade a spade. This is not fundamentalism, it's just honest clarity of expression. Thank you.
Well, interesting introductions from all four of the guests. Interesting on that last one, Richard Dawkins saying there the idea of fundamentalism being that there are notions you're not allowed to criticise. I mean, some might say that his own view of Darwinian evolution is one of those fundamentalist sort of assumptions. But in any case, this was the main element, really, of the debate, these four speeches that were put forward, because after that, there were no really formal responses to each other. Rather, we leapt straight into a question and answer format from the audience, which did inevitably draw some responses to what had been said during those initial speeches. But here are some of the responses, some of the questions that were put, some of the responses that were put. I can't include everything. Again, you'll have to go to intelligentsquared.com if you want to see the debate in its full format. But I'll be bringing some commentary and indeed some other people's views on it as we go through.
Professor Dawkins says that atheism has no catechism. I'm a disabled person, and as a disabled person, I have quite strong feelings about the issue of assisted suicide. I'm basically opposed to it. I looked at the British Humanist Association website, and they not only are in favour of assisted suicide, but have, as Richard Herries will know, stigmatised those who also, like me, are opposed to assisted suicide, portraying us as selfish. My contention is that for the new atheists, the rejection of the idea of this, of that life is to be preserved in most cases, is as much a statement of dogma as the Holy Trinity is to Christians.
I'll answer the first question on assisted suicide. I think it's a simple matter of individual freedom. If you don't want to go on living, who are society to stop you ceasing your life in a humane way? There's an additional point to this, which is that there are some people, and I know of at least one personally, who have committed suicide themselves long before they needed to or even strictly wanted to, because they wanted to do it while they were still in command of their faculties. And if they had known that when the time later came and they were no longer in command sufficiently in command of their faculties to do the deed themselves, there would be a doctor to help them. So if you allow assisted suicide, you might actually end up getting fewer suicides, or at least later suicides.
And then a quick response from, first of all, Charles Moore.
I want to pick up the question about, is it fundamentalist to say that there is no God? Did you notice that atheist bus campaign that they had? On the side, it said, there's probably no God. And the reason they said that, I think, is they realised they were in a bit of a muddle about this, because they could only truthfully say, according to their own position, that there's probably no God, because if they said there is no God, they would be making a statement of faith, and of course they feel they mustn't do that. So they were actually in a bit of a muddle about what on earth they were talking about.
Richard's not in a muddle.
What could be more fundamentalist than saying there is definitely no God? We demonstrated our lack of fundamentalism by saying the proper scientific thing, there's probably no God.
Thank you. I'm going to bring in Anthony one second. So, Richard, does that mean there may be a God, logically?
There may be a leprechaun.
Yes.
No, you can't let Richard get away with that. That's a ridiculous remark. That is a ridiculous remark.
You cannot
confuse the God of classical theism, which has animated the whole of Western philosophy, with a leprechaun, and I'm surprised at you.
Anthony says you can.
Look, firstly, with great respect to Charles Moore, it's he who's rather confused about the atheist bus. We did want to say there is no God on the bus, and it turned out that the Advertising Standards Authority required of us that we insert a probably there, despite the fact that the very many theist adverts on buses say things like Jesus saves and so on, rather unequivocally.
Well, that was an interesting interchange, wasn't it? And on the subject of the bus campaign, I did feel it was surely a little bit disingenuous to claim in one breath that they put the caption as probably no God, because they didn't want to be too overtly, if you like, dogmatic about it. And then in the next breath to say it was actually the advertising guidelines that stopped them saying anything more exact, you know, as in there is almost certainly no God. As to Christian adverts, well, personally, I haven't actually seen ones which outright attack another belief system. And surely that's the point of the atheist bus campaign. It's not really about what they believe. It's attacking what other people believe. And perhaps that's why people feel that was in some sense a sort of fundamentalist campaign in its own way. In any case, more questions followed. Here's some more.
Can I just get one in from Twitter, which is that Charles Moore has got it wrong, apparently, says an anonymous person on Twitter. Atheists don't think we are any better. The main point is we don't like religion getting a disproportionate say. I suppose the question is there, does religion get a disproportionate say? Do you have any comment on that?
I think that one of the good things about modern times is, and it goes back to early Christianity, and in this way I have no objection to Dawkins, Grayling and the rest of it, is that we've come under attack. That was part of the profound understanding of Christians about what is likely to happen to you in the world. And it's perfectly true, and all the atheists here, I agree with them if they say this, that when Christianity takes political power, it's very bad for Christianity and very bad for everybody else.
Richard, on balance, and a yes or no answer here, would the last 2,000 years have been better in Western civilization with no Christianity?
Yes.
That was a yes.
I'd like to take up one of the other questions I made, where I think the question was whether the new atheism has having a negative impact on society. I think that was the question that I picked, and I would actually, funny enough, say I don't think it is, because for too long religion has claimed the moral high ground, and I think the new atheism, in attacking religion from a moral standpoint, is quite right to do so, because there's a very great deal of bad religion around and they're right to criticise it. But they've slipped into this new intellectual fundamentalism by claiming the intellectual high ground. They now call themselves the brights. And once when I tackled Anthony Grayling with that, he looked a bit sheepish, as though he'd been rumbled. Yes, he did think himself one of the new breed of the brights.
Well, there were some friends of Unbelievable present in the audience as well. Ed Turner, known to many as the Manic Street Preacher online, got up to ask the following question.
I have a question for Charles Moore and Richard Harries. Do you think that if your subtle, scholarly, nuanced brand of religion was the norm, Richard Dawkins and A.C. Grayling wouldn't have had to write their books? The point is, I attended a lecture at a top British university last year given by the head of Answers in Genesis, Ken Ham, who was not only preaching scientific ignorance, he was also preaching right-wing bigotry from the grave of Jerry Falwell. Why shouldn't we get angry about that?
Okay. I'm going to ask the side to come in first on those.
Can I just say on that...
Can you speak to the microphone?
I don't believe that I was arguing for a subtle and nuanced brand of Christianity. I think I was simply arguing for a mainstream traditional form of Christianity. And, of course, you're right to attack people like the person you mentioned. But I don't think we should allow ourselves to be marginalised by thinking we're a sort of clever, super-modern version of Christianity that's being put forward, at least by me. This is just what has been put forward by mainstream churches throughout history. And one of the things that I think is quite wrong about the Dawkins-Grayling argument is to characterise, it's the other way round from what you're saying, they're taking people like mad creationists and they're trying to project that onto the whole of the Christian faith for 2,000 years. That seems to me a total misrepresentation.
I think we need to emphasise, of course, there's a very great deal of bad religion around, and bigotry, wherever it appears, needs to be attacked. But the debate tonight is not about bad religion. It's a question of whether the new atheism has slipped into a kind of fundamentalism. That is what the debate is about. Atheism, faced with certain forms of religion, is a kind of purification, is a necessary purification. And I made it clear at the beginning there are many forms of atheism I deeply respect.
If God did exist, how come he's letting Richard Dawkins and Anthony Grayling say what they are saying?
I think to help us all to think.
Good. Help us to think, both of you.
On this question, which the questioner raised about the good and the bad kinds of religion, I think he's absolutely right. It would be marvellous if all religious people were like our two panellists here tonight. And it may be right that deserves the title mainstream in some historical periods, but I rather doubt that. But the fact is, it doesn't today. And if you go to the United States, as I often do, the huge majority of religious people are just the kind of religious people you don't want. And that's the reason why I found it necessary to write The God Delusion. The questioner is absolutely right. There would have been no need if everybody was like Charles Moore and Richard Harries, but unfortunately they're not. To pick up on the Cluedo jibe that Charles Moore raised, that the Reverend Green did it, in America he's not even called the Reverend Green. He's called Mr. Green. He's not allowed to be called the Reverend Green because in America it's inconceivable that a clergyman could possibly do anything wrong.
This was, I think, quite a key part of the discussion. It often came back to who is actually being criticised, and the mention of fundamentalist Christians was often put forward. Evident, obviously, that Charles Moore and Richard Harries don't represent that particular brand of Christianity, and that's primarily whom Dawkins aims his material at. Oddly, it is those who hold to a more fundamentalist position that he won't actually debate, which raises the whole question of why he won't debate them if that's where most of his material is aimed. But in any case, we'll be getting more of the question and answer sessions in the next section of the programme. Also, hearing interviews with members of the audience, and towards the end of the programme, an interview with A.C. Grayling, a very quick conversation I managed to take with him, and Anthony Seldon, who chaired the discussion. You're listening to Unbelievable, a little bit different in our format today, as we're reviewing a recent debate that Richard Dawkins took part in alongside A.C. Grayling, Lord Richard Harries, former Bishop of Oxford, and Charles Moore, the former editor of the Daily Telegraph, on the motion, is atheism the new fundamentalism? If you want to listen back to this programme, this review programme, of course, you can do that at the Unbelievable webpage, that's premier.org.uk /unbelievable. And if you'd like to leave me an email or you'd like to leave a phone message, the way to do that, email me at unbelievable@premier.org.uk. If you'd like to leave a phone message, 08456 52 52 52, select option 8. I'd love to hear from you, especially if you were at the debate or you've seen it since. Get your response to how you think it went down. And I'll be giving you the results as well a little later in the programme of what the final tally was on the motion. So that's all to come here on Unbelievable.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to Unbelievable. Well, a little bit different today on the programme. We're not having an in-studio conversation. Rather, I'm reviewing a debate that took place a couple of weeks ago at Wellington College in Berkshire. This was between A.C. Grayling, Richard Dawkins, Lord Richard Harris, former Bishop of Oxford, and Charles Moore, a Christian and former editor of the Daily Telegraph, discussing whether atheism is the new fundamentalism. And as I say, a little later we'll actually hear a short interview I took with atheist philosopher A.C. Grayling and the chair of the debate, Anthony Seldon. But I was also speaking to people who had turned up to watch the debate. I didn't get this lady's name, but this was one young lady who viewed the debate and her thoughts on it. So did you enjoy the debate tonight?
Yes, it was great fun.
And if you'd mind me asking, which way did you vote?
In the end, I was one of the 85 don't knows.
One of the 85 don't knows. Do you feel that, I suppose there are arguments in both directions on this one, if you were to describe atheism as a fundamentalism, what did you think was the strongest argument for the motion?
I'm not sure about the strongest argument, but I just think that people are different, so there's going to be fundamentalists on both sides. So if you can argue that religion can be fundamentalist, you can also argue that atheists could be fundamentalist. Each person is different, I guess, was my conclusion.
Where do you stand yourself on the whole issue of faith?
I'm an atheist, so I went into it and I was supporting Dawkins' side of it as I went in, but I came out, I don't know.
Oh, right, so you actually changed from being for, against, to don't know.
Yes, I
did. Okay, that's interesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, back to the debate. The format was that a number of questions would get asked in a row and then the speakers would respond to them. Here's a number that got asked at one particular point. The one I was most interested in was this first one from one particular gentleman who I'm assuming was a Christian.
Professor Dawkins, you are arguably the world's leading apologist for atheism. And you have been invited on several occasions by arguably the world's leading Christian academic apologist, Dr. William Lane Craig, to engage in debate. I would like to know why this is not an example of the new atheist doing what Lord Harris has described as avoiding the strongest possible arguments from the opposition.
Okay,
thank you.
That's a very straight question. Over here now and then at the back, please. Let's take question number two at the back, please.
Atheist fundamentalism is not a new phenomenon. If Professor Dawkins had read history of Russia and China, he would know that atheism conducted programs of violence against people of faith. Have you a comment to make on that, please, Professor?
That's a monstrous suggestion. But we're going to hold back in just a second, and the monster will just be suppressed while we have the third question over here.
Professor Grayling talked about the many strands of unbelief, and Charles Moore talked about the subtleties of Christianity, and I wonder whether Mr. Moore would like to comment on the idea that there's not much subtlety in calling everybody that's an unbeliever an atheist.
Okay, we'll take Richard first on why you're not apparently prepared to debate against that lady, then we'll come over here and we'll finish up on the question there about Stalin's gulags.
I have always said when invited to do debates that I will be happy to debate a bishop, a cardinal, a pope, an archbishop. Indeed, I have done both. But that I don't take on creationists and I don't take on people whose only claim to fame is that they are professional debaters. They've got to have something more than that. I'm busy.
And if she said she was busy too, you would say...
It was a he, actually, but...
Oh, my goodness, what a boo. Over here, moving straight on, yeah.
Well, Anthony Seldon may have been a bit confused as to the gender of William Lane Craig, but in any case, it was an interesting question. We'll hear the responses to those other questions you also heard. But I was really I have to confess, unimpressed with Dawkins' response as to why he won't debate William Lane Craig. It feels to me like he's just running away, a very poor excuse. I mean, this exclusion of anyone who isn't a bishop or a cardinal, I mean, it just doesn't seem to make any sense to me. And it feels to me like he is actually avoiding the person who probably poses the greatest threat to him. And William Lane Craig is not just a professional debater. He is a philosopher, and he's been published in many philosophical journals. He has similar credentials to A.C. Grayling. So not impressed at all, actually, at Dawkins' response to that. However, let's go on to hear some of the responses to other questions that were put forward.
Well, I think the lady over there was asking a question about how did I describe unbelievers. I certainly wouldn't describe all people who don't believe as atheists. Obviously not. And nor would I just treat all atheists in the same way. The point of this argument tonight is about a particular character of atheism which has decided to assail Christianity without trying to faith more broadly, without, I think, honestly trying to understand what it is. And it's that to which I'm objecting.
Thank you very much. And now the response on Russia. Richard.
The implication was made that the monstrosity, the awfulness of Stalin's Russia, Mao's China, had something to do with atheism. These were dreadful people having dreadful political philosophy which they ruthlessly enforced in their countries. It is incidentally true that they happened to be atheists. It's incidentally true that Hitler, Stalin and Saddam Hussein all had moustaches. But it's nothing to do with either their moustaches or, in the case of Stalin, his atheism. Hitler wasn't an atheist.
Okay, serious point here, Richard. What would then be your response to somebody who would say that Mohammed Atta and his 18 colleagues on 9/11 had nothing to do truly with spirituality and with love of mankind?
It had everything to do with their Islamic religion. You know absolutely for sure, nobody heard it, but we all know what their last words were. They were motivated by religion from start to finish. We have their testimony to say so. There's absolutely no serious doubt that they were motivated by their Islamic faith to do that terrible deed that they did. I won't say that it's spiritual. You can easily say it's not my kind of religion. Of course it's not. But that's not the point. It was religion that did it. There's a logical pathway between religious belief and doing acts of hideous violence, in the way that there is no logical pathway between atheism and doing acts of hideous violence.
Okay, but...
Well, this issue of atheist regimes, etc., would come up later in my discussions with people who had viewed it. The debate was attended by many young people, actually, and I interviewed three A-level students from a nearby girls' school, all of them apparently atheists, and one of their teachers who had brought them along. You're going to hear, first of all, Ellie, and then Liz.
I suppose a lot of people are worried that the new atheism, as represented by Richard Dawkins, is very shrill, very outspoken, and perhaps that's why they label it as fundamentalist. I mean, do you think that there is a danger of it going too far?
Yes, I do. Although today I thought Grayling and Dawkins came across as quite moderate. That's how they presented themselves, but I guess that was the whole point of the argument, was to try and present themselves as not fundamental, whereas often in their books they are quite fundamental. So I thought it could definitely go that way.
They come across a bit different on paper.
Yes.
I mean, I think that's it when a lot of people read
the
Got
Delusion. But I think
both
sides were trying to present themselves as not fundamental, because that was the whole point of the debate.
Yes, absolutely. It would have gone against them if they'd suddenly
exactly
started ranting and banging the desk or something.
Exactly.
But most believers actually believe he's maybe attacking a caricature of religion in some way. Do you think that might be fair?
Yeah, I think often the examples he uses are a bit unfair. They're quite very extremist, the examples he uses that he attacks. Although I, as an atheist, personally would agree with some of his arguments. They are sometimes a bit extreme, and the people he's attacking aren't necessarily the normal believers.
As an atheist, you may not have an answer for this, so don't worry if you don't, but what would it take to convince you that there is a God or there is something?
I don't know. I went from being quite a strong Christian, I mean, I went to church every Sunday, to changing my mind. So I don't know necessarily where... I feel that once I've changed my mind from being quite a strong Christian, I don't know whether there was necessarily anything that would make me go back. I mean, I think there have been things that have happened to me in my life which make me think there couldn't possibly be a God. So I don't know whether there would be necessarily anything that would change my mind back again.
I would say, I don't know, that makes me sound really close-minded. I do like hearing debates on it, and I can appreciate lots of religious believers' views, but personally I don't think there would be anything that would make me change back to religion.
And you didn't feel you lost anything when you made that decision to abandon your faith for atheism?
I don't know. I didn't have anyone necessarily to talk to anymore. I used to pray a bit, but I don't know. I tend to talk to myself now instead. I don't think I lost anything. I found it quite enlightening. I don't know, that might be the wrong word. I don't necessarily feel that I lost anything. I kind of miss going to church, necessarily, I think, and not seeing my friends, but I thought that was more of a social thing than necessarily a religious thing. So I don't think I felt lost much.
Do you think that it's a shame? I've read The God Delusion. I've also read The Selfish Gene by Richard Dawkins, and I do think that, although I'm a great fan of his, I do think it's a shame that in The God Delusion he does come across as quite sort of angry and has quite a tone, and he's quite dismissive of a religious view, which I think is a shame, because I think if you read his other work, like The Selfish Gene, he does come across as a lot more logical and a lot more balanced. But I still think, like, the points that he has to make, the underlying points, are still very valid and fair enough to him that he makes them. But I do think that it's a shame the way that he's written it. So I can see why people criticise the book.
Absolutely.
And as a biologist as well, I think he's got more of a basis in that than he does as a philosopher.
Really interesting points. Right, finally, can I have your name?
I'm Helena. I went in saying I didn't know, I didn't have a decision, and then I voted against the motion in the end, but that was purely because I just found it more convincing. I found the argument more convincing. And they were just, on the night, the two that convinced me most of the arguments, because of the reasons that these two have already said. Like, the thing on the bus, it's probably. You can't know, and we're not going to say this is definitely how
Though
it is.
They did say, actually, in the end, they admitted that was because of the Advertising Standards Authority, and what Richard Dawkins actually wanted to put on it was there is almost certainly no God, like he says in the book. Now, that's obviously a bit more definite about it.
I think they have to say it to that extent, because if you go around saying there could be a God, there probably is a God, you're not going to get anyone really to listen to you, because you don't really seem to have a view at all. So I think you have to say it with some force to make people pay attention to you, really.
Three very intelligent, very articulate girls, and all credit probably to their teacher. Could I have a few words as well? Do tell me your name.
Vicky Gibson.
And you teach philosophy?
Philosophy of religion, yes, at the Abbey School. And I'm also the school chaplain.
I see, yes. Right. Ah, your true colours coming out
yes.
now. So tell me what you thought of tonight's debate.
I enjoyed it very much. I thought it was comprehensive. I was a bit concerned it might be over our heads, but in fact I thought it was popularised very well. And in that respect, I think it drew in a wide audience. It was clear to me, however, that there were a lot of Dawkins fans there. Mm. To his credit, he's popularised this subject in a way that's made people talk about it, and I think that's all to the good.
What way did you vote when you came in? Did it change during the course of the debate?
No, I thought I voted for the motion and I stayed in that camp. Mm-hmm.
So why do you believe that there is a fundamentalist aspect to atheism?
Because I think that Dawkins makes the same mistakes as Christian fundamentalists and Islamic fundamentalists. He takes things literally. He doesn't accept that there might be other points of view. He's essentially a materialist. He only sees things as being based in evidence. And he's not prepared to accept that things like religious experience or faith, or indeed myth or allegory or metaphor or symbol are other forms of truth. And I think he went some way this evening to a compromise position, but I think that was just for the purposes of the debate. I don't think he really believes that. And at the end his true colours came out when he started attacking Islamic fundamentalism and the Twin Towers. For me, that blew a hole in his argument.
Why so?
Because he always goes back, when he's on the back foot, he always goes back to picking on easy targets.
But wasn't his point that there is a logical link between religion and violence? There is no logical link between atheism and violence. That was his mantra.
As a historian, I was a historian before I was an ethicist. I mean, you can see that Stalin and Hitler and Chairman Mao, although he maintained that their atheism was incidental, their atheistic beliefs meant that they could do whatever they liked. They have nobody there accountable to at the end of their lives. I think human nature, when it's allowed to do what it wants, it's horrible. And it's the same with religious people as well. I think that what he was trying to say is that religion undergirded the violence with the Twin Towers, but that atheism did not undergird what Stalin did in Russia. You can't have it both ways. You know, you have to accept that those Islamic fundamentalists were not motivated by love and compassion, and peace, which is at the heart of the Islamic faith, or indeed is at the heart of the Christian faith. That was ignored. He simply wanted to draw a line between religion and violence. Well, yeah, I can do the same with atheism and violence, or you can say, well, these things are incidental, and that you can take pot shots at them because they are easy to take pot shots at. But basically, human nature, in its raw form, is actually quite nasty. And that's what both these sides illustrate, but he wasn't prepared to concede that.
Well, of all the spectators that I interviewed, the chaplain and teacher there at the end, Vicky, was in fact the only Christian, which perhaps explains to a degree the way the vote went. But I'll give you the results of that a little later. Back to the discussion, though, right towards the end of the discussion, the ultimate cause of the universe was brought up. Here's how it came up.
And in just 10 words each, if God didn't create the universe, why are we here?
We find ourselves here, and I would agree with the other two that if we find ourselves here, we should assume responsibility for our lives and exult in the good things and do what we can to remedy the evil things.
Slightly more than 10 words, but very clear.
I don't see why this is a question I have to answer. It's not my problem.
Not Charles Moore's problem. If God didn't create the universe, who did, gentlemen?
Oh, that you've changed the question, and that, if I may say, is a silly question. The question you first asked is if the universe wasn't created by a supernatural agency of some kind, then what are we doing here? My answer is we're here to create meaning and to take care of one another.
Thank you very much. You could be nice to me later. Richard Dawkins.
If God didn't create the universe, who did? In a way, that's the whole point. The smuggling in of that word who is begging that huge question. Nobody created it, and if you try to postulate something like a God who did, then you've opened up an even larger question than the one you've solved. To answer the question of how did the universe come about by saying it was created by a God is to create a bigger question. It's to provide no answer at all. It's a non-answer.
Well, just a short segment there, but I think personally this is why Dawkins does need to engage a philosopher like William Lane Craig, because the answers he gives to this are so patently inadequate. You simply can't exclude God as a cause because he doesn't fit in with your materialistic worldview. Surely that's the point of the debate. Can there be a non-material cause to a material universe? And to me, it seems that Dawkins has just got these blinkers on which don't allow God, anything outside a kind of actual physical cause, to be the cause of something else. Anyway, it was a question that would come up again in a discussion I had with two more atheist students, Nick and Solomon.
When you came in, what was your vote for, against, or don't know?
100% against the motion. I do not think atheism is the new fundamentalism.
And did it change during the course of the debate?
Not at all, actually. I don't think Harry's and Charles Moore actually addressed the issue properly. And I was just saying to my friend here that I think Charles Moore actually put across too much of his own belief, and I think I'd actually put atheists off. He was saying too much about his own Christianity rather than criticising the atheism.
That's interesting. I mean, obviously, lots of people do see the new atheists as being very, if you like, maybe over the top in the way they do their stuff, you know. Perhaps that's part of the reason why people talk about it as being fundamentalist.
Yes.
Do you think that's fair?
I think people are pointing out the fact that it's getting very loud. You know, the bus campaigns, you know, don't label children, the campaigns against faith schools. But I don't think we have any other choice. I think, you know, we have to make this attack because, as I think Dawkins and Grayling probably pointed out in the debate, you know, sort of pre-9/11, atheists were a lot more quiet and it was, you know, quite rude. But I think afterwards we don't have as much choice. We have to stand up and say, and not everyone is going to like us.
All right, well, thank you very much for your points of view. So, what's your name?
Solomon Roberts.
Do you mind telling me what you voted before you went into the debate?
I was 95% against.
Okay, and did that change during the debate?
Not really. Stayed about 95%. I'd say the charge of it being new fundamentalism is just misdirected. It's just a little bit too strong. And just perhaps denying people's choice to believe in other things.
Mm. I mean, the fact, though, that Richard Dawkins, you know, describes people who put their children into a faith school as abusing them. Mm-hmm. I mean, that may, people probably see that as a bit over the top, you know, when he says that in The God Delusion. I mean, do you think that there is a danger of people like Richard Dawkins making the case too strongly?
Possibly, but with Sifty speaking out against faith schools, I can't see how it's going to do that much damage, and it'll just annoy some parents. And really, we have a question of putting your child in a faith school as abuse or not. Once it can be worth, it's instruction. I suppose when the children grow up and start doing things against those religions, and the parents will then have difficult decisions to make as to how they punish their children, then the question of whether they abuse them becomes more relevant.
Mm. If you don't mind me asking, where do you find yourself? Are you an atheist yourself?
Mm, yeah.
And would you say that's a... You look relatively young, man. Mm-hmm. Is that something you've held kind of since you can remember, or is that something you've adopted recently?
Yeah, largely my parents are atheist and agnostic, so I've just come in and it's just what I am.
Have you sort of thought through that in the sense of thinking through the arguments for and against God, or that's where you've comfortably landed?
That's where I comfortably landed and thought about it a bit, but it's generally a case of thinking what is the scientific likelihood of a God, the evidence suggests against it. And so really it seems most likely to say there most certainly isn't a God and I don't need one.
I mean, I run a faith discussion programme and we regularly talk about things like whether science disproves God and that kind of thing. It was kind of hinted at in this debate today, but, you know, there is this huge question of where did the universe come from, and the fact that we, firstly, that there is a universe, and secondly, that the universe we live in is, as it's called, so immensely fine-tuned to be able to produce life. There's no reason why the universe should have been as fine-tuned as it was. Mm-hmm. There's no reason why it should have had the ability to produce life, but it did. Mm-hmm. It's almost like we were meant to be here. The universe saw us coming. Now, it's understandable that many people would say that is great evidence that there is a God who was behind this universe, who intended for this to happen. And a lot of people, I think, also just feel like we are here for a reason. We're not just a cosmic accident. Do you have any of those feelings?
Not really. With the creation of life, then yes, all the specifics of the force of gravity being as it is, the right distance from the sun. But at the same time, the universe is infinite, and there are thousands upon thousands upon thousands of planets, and therefore it's possible, as it's a fragment of infinity, that there is one where everything is at just the right level to allow for life. Even if it is most improbable.
But we're not even talking about planets, we're talking about at the start when it was created, the Big Bang, that the constants, as they're called, of the Big Bang were so incredibly fine-tuned that any slight difference in any of those constants in a tiniest way would never have allowed carbon to develop, which is the basis of life being here. And many people say that's not an accident, that the odds are too astronomically ridiculous for that to be an accident. What do you say to that kind of argument? I see that our friend wants to come back in here for that.
But no one will ever know. It could just be chance. It might be more meaningful. But really, the thing that's part of the fun and genre of science is just to understand more and more and more and get better and better theories, more understanding, and you should accept that you'll never know for sure. And suppose the people who like to believe that there's some kind of meaning in the existence of carbon for existence, then I suppose they can have that and enjoy the essence of meaningless to their existence.
Let me come back to you, sir, because you're itching to get in. I've been suggesting to your friend what's called the fine-tuning argument for God, start of the universe, the elements needed to be so incredibly fine-tuned that it seems
bizarre to say that it was simply good luck chance.
Yes.
It looks like we were meant to be here. It looks like we live in a universe that was designed to hold us. It looks like there was a designer. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, I'm no physicist. But I do know physicists, one notable one, Victor Strenger, who wrote God, the Failed Hypothesis. He's a very, very worthy physicist, and he denies these fine tunings and you know, the various other points of that argument. And there are other physicists like him, but I'm not a physicist, so I'm not going to argue on that. Accepting those fine tunings, and if you change one just a little bit, one point against this is that this is just one universe. There could have been many big bands, there could be a multiverse, and Christians and other believers say, oh, isn't the idea of a multiverse just so, oh, that's just, you know, that's just stupid, and, you know, they can't know that.
I have a bit of a problem, though, with atheists like Victor Strenger, because it seems to me that atheism comes before their science, i.e. they have already ruled out anything other than naturalistic causes, because they're committed to a naturalistic universe. Now, the problem is, that means that they've ruled out God a priori. Isn't that a bit disingenuous? Because isn't the scientific endeavour all about finding the best explanation for something? If you are not an atheist, if you are a theist, then God is a perfectly good explanation as something that is immutable and beyond the universe. It serves a perfect explanation for this universe.
Well, you were saying with atheists like Victor Strenger, they rule out this possibility a priori. I think if you read books like Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion, Victor Strenger's book, God, the Failed Hypothesis, I think you'll, and there's other books, you know, Bertrand Russell's Why I'm Not a Christian, they go and they look at this question. And there's numerous other books, they go and they look at this question and they say, okay, let's consider every single religious argument that's been put forward, let's consider the best versions of those arguments. You know, they're not ignoring the fine tuning. They go and they look in every respect that all the Christians go and look for. They are looking, but they're not finding. They cannot find it. They don't think the argument works. They don't think the evidence works. They go and they look for it. That's why it's the hypothesis that Dawkins writes about and that Strenger writes about. He's talking about a hypothesis, but they come to reject that hypothesis.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Well, we'll be hearing more of my discussions with some of the spectators who went to see that particular discussion. The motion again of this debate that we're reviewing today was, is atheism the new fundamentalism? And we'll be hearing the votes for and against that in a moment's time. You'll also be hearing a very short chat I had with A.C. Grayling immediately after the debate. Also, Anthony Seldom, who is the master of Wellington College, where the debate took place, and indeed was chairing the debate. And don't forget, if you want to listen back to this programme, send it on to a friend. You can download the podcast now at premier.org.uk/unbelievable. Do tell your friends about it, and there's a whole heap of past programmes between atheists, Christians and people of other faiths to have a look at, all sorts of topics that we cover on a weekly basis. premier.org.uk/unbelievable is the place to go. And I do encourage you to email me your response to today's programme, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. We'll be back with the final section of our programme in just a moment's time. If you've been listening to the rest of the programme, you'll know we've been reviewing a debate that took place between Richard Dawkins and fellow atheist A.C. Grayling. They were against, if you like, Richard Harris, former Bishop of Oxford, and Christian and former Daily Telegraph editor Charles Moore. And they were arguing the motion, atheism is the new fundamentalism. Well, I said at the beginning that the votes before the debate began were 333 for that motion, 675 against, and 389 undecided. Well, at the end of the evening, those in agreement with the motion that atheism is the new fundamentalism, there were 363 votes for, there were 1,070 against, and 85 undecided. So obviously, in this instance, it was the atheists who triumphed as far as the vote went. Well, I asked Anthony Seldon about that a little bit later when I had the chance to grab an interview with him, and you'll hear that in a moment's time. First of all, though, literally just as the speakers were coming off the platform, I managed to grab one of them. He was A.C. Grayling, atheist professor of philosophy, and I just grabbed this very short interview before he was bustled into a minibus along with the rest of the party to go on to a dinner. So I'm afraid he was the only one of the platform speakers that I was able to grab a short interview with. But here's what I asked him when I did manage to grab him.
So they were looking for a provocative, an interestingly provocative question, which should bring out the issues that do need to be discussed, because it is an important matter.
I mean, something that Charles Moore seemed to be suggesting is that the tone of the debate is what makes it people believe that this is fundamentalist in some way. I mean, is that the problem?
Well, we addressed that in the debate, saying that, if you're upset by what people say in criticism of your views, then you might describe it, as he indeed did, as being arrogant and intolerant and intemperate and they're a bunch of fundamentalists and so on. And we replied by saying, look, on some issues, my own point about secularism very particularly concerned the fact that these points need to be made robustly, uncompromisingly. And as Richard said, sometimes you have to speak clearly, say what you mean. And of course, if that upsets somebody, they're going to say, you're being fundamentalist. But it isn't fundamentalism. In fact, actually and literally, it's not possible to be an atheist fundamentalist, because atheism is simply a negative position which says, I don't believe in fairies or whatever it is that you're discussing.
One last question. No. You said the job of you as a humanist is to find the best way forward in life.
Yes, yes.
But how can you speak of best in a godless universe?
Of course you can. I mean, we understand perfectly well what conduces to human flourishing. People need food and shelter and peace, opportunities for education. We're very intelligent primates, and we need to be able to exercise our talents and develop them. There are as many different talents for good and flourishing and satisfying lives as there are people to live them. And we have a responsibility to one another as social animals and very sophisticated ones. And so, of course, we must look for the best. We must strive to try and develop ourselves and help other people.
The Nazi government believed they had a view of what the best was.
Torquemada.
Absolutely.
The Taliban.
How then, on whose authority do we say this is the best? The Nazis said it on their authority, you say it on your authority.
That the way the Nazis tried to run things was defeated by the rest of the world not agreeing with their way of doing things in 17 years. And in the case of Stalinism, in 17. It's taking a bit longer to get rid of the worst excesses of religious views, but there we are, we're trying.
Thank you very much.
Well, I certainly spoke to many other people who watched the debate after it. Here's Rebecca. Interestingly, she was not as forthright as her atheist friends when it came to her views on the debate and the fundamentalism of the new atheism.
Rebecca, tell me, when you came to the debate tonight, what did you vote as you went through the door?
I voted for.
You voted for the motion. And did anything during the debate change your mind?
I thought that the debate... It turned into a debate about theism versus atheism, rather than a debate about whether atheism is the new fundamentalism, so I didn't really hear any arguments either way about the actual proposition, so I didn't have a lot to change my mind, to be honest, so I didn't change my mind.
So tell me, why did you vote for the proposition? Why do you believe atheism is the new fundamentalism?
Listen to my friends. I asked one of them what he thought about religion, and he said he agreed with what most of Dawkins said. And I think that's like asking my friend why she believes in Christianity, and she says, because I believe in what most of the Bible says. I'm not necessarily religious, but I do think that atheism is kind of the default these days, whereas religious fundamentalism was always the default before. And I think that, I have a friend whose parents, I have another friend whose parents are atheists, and she was brought up being an atheist, and she never questioned religion because she was brought up that way, which is the way I think that religion, they were talking about faith schools, that's what faith schools do. So it's just two sides of the argument doing the same thing, I think.
I mean, there was talk as well in the debate about secularism and A.C. Grayling saying, secularism is where we simply take religious views out of the marketplace so that they don't have to affect people. But I suppose the problem is secularism itself is a view. It has its beliefs. It's based on something.
Yeah.
What people believe ultimately will determine what they do, won't it? And so, in some sense, whether you think you're kind of being neutral or not.
I think it's not ever possible to be neutral because we're all humans, and if there was one person who we knew was being neutral, we could all just follow them. But seeing as we don't know that, we choose our beliefs, and if we choose our beliefs, and our beliefs are kind of atheism or secularism, that's still going to be to other people a coloured belief, whereas kind of I might think that religious fundamentalism is a belief which is coloured by a kind of wrong view. No one has the right answer. That's the point. That's why we're debating. I think secularism is not necessarily any better than religious fundamentalism, and like to claim that it is without having kind of without investigating it is just the same as having a text which you believe in without investigating it and just pushing the text.
If you don't mind me asking, do you have a particular faith position? Are you agnostic on the whole question?
I vary. Sometimes I'm a very strong atheist and sometimes I'm very religious. But I think like they said in the debate, everyone goes through a phase when they're an atheist. And I did that when I was about 13 for about 2 years. And then I kind of switched and now I'm just not sure anymore.
Mm. What is it about, if you like, believing there is more than just what we're made of and the laws of nature and things? Is there something attractive to you about that idea?
There's something attractive to everyone about that idea. I think that's why these days it's like kind of romance films are so popular, because that replaces the idea of God, because not everyone believes in that. So I think obviously everybody wants something higher. Like when Dawkins was speaking, he said that he knew that he would die at the end, and obviously he accepted that, but it's still sad. We still would like to believe that we can, we're going to continue. We'd like to believe that our lives are more than just this. So
well, thank you very much, and it's been really good to get all of your views.
Well, finally, I was able to talk to Anthony Seldon. He's the master of Wellington College, where they held the debate, and he has been integral in sort of getting involved in these Intelligence Squared debates and bringing these kinds of debates to that college. So good on him for having the initiative to do that. But he shared his neutral hat as the chair of the debate while I walked along to another location in the college with him, and he showed that he was in fact no fan himself of the new atheism. I began by asking him why he had initiated this debate.
I think that we got to examine the ideas that Richard Dawkins is peddling. To me, there are three camps. There are the religious fundamentalists in all religions. There are the atheists who I think are fundamentalists. And then there's a third camp who actually follow the words and the practices of faith, the words of Jesus, and genuinely do love their fellow man and genuinely devote their entire lives to trying to understand God's will and to serve their fellow men. So I think that the Richard Dawkins and A.C. Grayling are popular champions, and I think they're wrong, because the only truth about life and the total inability to answer that last question, which is, why was life created? Well, the universe was created by God, and their inability to even think that's a serious, worthwhile question shows, in a way, their shallowness of their argument, as is their blaming of religion for all those bad things done in the name of religion. I mean, it's just a childish argument.
Were you disappointed then with the way the vote went tonight?
No, I was. I was neither disappointed nor surprised. I mean, I was chairman, and I tried to be an honest chairman. The moral, the Christian duty of the chairman tonight was to be fair to both sides and ensure that both sides had a fair voice and that people from all sections of the House were able to ask questions, and I think that they did. And so, in my chairman's hat, I was pleased with it. And as an individual, as a believer, I wasn't surprised or disappointed. I just think that Christianity profoundly needs to renew itself and to reconnect with what Jesus said, and I think that will happen. I think the next few years, I've argued elsewhere for a new Reformation, 500 years after Luther.
Well, thank you for listening to this review of that debate that took place at Wellington College a few weeks ago. And if you want to see it for yourself in full, they've made the audio and the YouTube video fully available at the Intelligence Squared website. Do go along there, intelligencesquared.com, if you'd like to see the full debate. I hope you've enjoyed this review, though, with some of the commentary from those who watched the discussion. Obviously, the vast majority of those I spoke to, and I assume in the hall, were atheists, but there were obviously a number of Christians there as well. Certainly not many of them came up to my microphone afterwards. So the question was, is atheism the new fundamentalism? I have to say that I get the feeling that there was a little bit of confusion as to what fundamentalism actually means. Of course, when we say atheism is the new fundamentalism, a proponent of that wouldn't be suggesting that atheists are going and committing acts of violence and that sort of thing. I think it's a different sense of fundamentalism that is meant there. But the problem was that A.C. Grayling and Richard Dawkins quite often were referring to a kind of violence sense of fundamentalism, which is not what we're talking about when we're talking about the new atheism. I think what we're talking about, if we're suggesting that there is a fundamentalist aspect to the new atheism, is this idea that there's a refusal to acknowledge any possibility of alternative explanations, that the physical material universe is all that there is, and also that everything has to fit into this Darwinian evolutionary picture. And for me, that's just way too much of a squeeze. It simply cannot account for the full range of human experience and all the questions that this universe poses. For me, that's why I do believe there is a fundamentalism to the new atheism, because it is a form of dogma. To say that the materialistic universe is all there is, that is a form of dogma, actually, whether you like it or not. But that's my opinion, and you're welcome to disagree. You can do that by emailing me, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. And if you'd like to get in touch by phone, 08456 52 52 52, select option 8 to leave me a voicemail message. I'll try and play that out on a future show. And of course, you can listen back to this programme at premier.org.uk/unbelievable. I'll be posting links as well to the full debate with the podcast. Once again, that's premier.org.uk/unbelievable. My thanks to everyone who came up and were willing to speak into my microphone during the evening, and indeed to those who were up on the platform representing the debate.
Thank you for listening to today's classic replay on whether atheism is the new fundamentalism, which was first broadcast on Premier Christian Radio on the 12th of December 2009. You can get in touch and listen to more classic shows from our podcast archive at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable.